Welcome to Okay, Let's Talk. I'm your host, Kendall Ford. I am a writer, storyteller, and absolutely love empowering people. I believe that our stories and experiences, no matter how much pain or heartbreak they may have once caused, hold incredible power. The power to bring freedom, the power to uplift others, and the power to live triumphantly. Sometimes people just need a listening ear and a safe space. This is that space. So, okay, let's talk. Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to this part two of Okay, Let's Talk Context. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to just, first of all, thank everyone for joining in for the first episode. Thank you for those of you who sent kind messages to me and words of encouragement. This show has been a long time coming, and I'm really excited to finally be embarking on this journey. And so I just really appreciate all of you tuning in and listening and being so supportive. I want to also kind of highlight that one of the reasons I wanted to start with giving a little context about myself is that I believe in the power of storytelling. I believe in the power of shared experiences and in safety and vulnerability. And so I don't just believe in that for others, but I also believe in it for myself. And so I feel like it was really important to me for me to also lead by example. And so if I'm going to be, you know, having my friends come in and join me on this show and talk about some of their experiences, I don't want to just put people in the hot seat and just leave them there. But it's important for me to also lead by example and also like wanted to just share where this whole beautiful journey of this show even came from. And so I'm just super appreciative of all of you tuning in and listening and being so loving and kind with your feedback. I am incredibly, incredibly touched and grateful. But let's dive into episode two of Okay, Let's Talk. And we're in part two of Let's Talk Context. And so if you are joining us for the first time, I highly recommend going back to episode one and starting there, because we're going to just dive right in to where we left off on the last episode. So yeah. So I promise you we would start talking about March 2020. Was when Cam and I evacuated Ethiopia. March 2020 changed a lot for me. I was actually supposed to go to Paris. It was my 30th birthday gift from my parents. We were all going to meet in Paris, but never quite made it to Paris. Thank you, COVID. And ended up evacuating Ethiopia and leaving everything we had known for the past few years instead. It was kind of interesting for me because a few weeks before we left Ethiopia, I had heard God speak to me super clearly, and I heard him say like it was time for us to go home, and I was like, "What? okay, Lord, like I don't know what to really do with that." So I didn't really do anything. But then we found out like the following Sunday that we had to be out of country by the following Thursday, and so we had a few days to like pack what we could. I think we had about 8 suitcases, and then we were out, we were gone. And it was super hard. It was super rushed. It was incredibly unfinished. At this point I was incredibly just anxious, full of anxiety. I was in survival mode. I really didn't understand it at the moment, but I couldn't say goodbye. I just packed what I could, and we just rushed and we left Ethiopia. So when I think about that time of leaving, I just think of like it was rushed, hard, and unfinished. We left people that we never got to say goodbye to. We left a lot of our belongings. We left a lot of things that we loved in Ethiopia, and we never fully got to say that goodbye. So that was super hard. And the goodbye was really hard. Even after having a really rough first year overseas, the goodbye at the end was really hard because, honestly, at the beginning of my second year, I kind of just stopped giving a crap. And I was like, you know what? I I need to look at myself and look at my life and what kind of things do I need in Ethiopia in order for me and Cam to actually build a life here. And so I'm really proud of us in a way, because we went from having a super hard first year where we felt like we had no life, no support, no anything, into kind of molding into the second year where it was hard to say that goodbye, even though it was necessary, because we had actually, God had given us a life there. And so I asked myself this beginning of our second year, I said, okay, so what do I need to actually build a life here? When I move somewhere, now I kind of have this checklist of things that I know have to be in place in order for me to feel like, okay, I'm really living here. And the first thing for me is just having friends. But building friends as an adult is hard. So that was always, it was just like, honestly, me finding friends in Ethiopia was a lot of prayer. It was like, God, you know, I'm a little special, but I value having a tribe and having a community. And so I need you to just guide me to the right people. And so I knew that I needed to find some friends. I also knew I needed a gym community. Fitness is super important to me. It's a huge outlet for me, especially having dealt with anxiety for so long and depression. Having a gym community wherever I live for me is incredibly, incredibly important. Even living here in Springfield, I didn't feel like I really genuinely lived here until I had a gym community. So that was really important to me. And then also another thing is having work-life balance. And for that means like I go to work, but I also have a life separate from work. So everything that I do is not revolved around work, but also like everything isn't just play. So there's like a balance there. And honestly, that's what I found. By the grace of God, I just want to give a huge shout out to some of my girls, Dita and Mary and Carrie and Lindsay and Mama Roxanne all the way in Canada. And my roommate, Kayla. I just want to give a shout out to these ladies, because these women were my lifeline. They were my family in Ethiopia. When I found this group of people, I found like I really started to live. We hung out on the weekends. We were silly. We had girl talk, and yeah, they were my lifeline. And then I did find an amazing gym community in Ethiopia. And it was awesome because it was on this like compound. And so a lot of, and because Ethiopia, the weather's nice most of the year. And so a lot of the workout equipment was outside. So you could work outside in the courtyard. But then they also had like cardio equipment in the house. And then like the guy who owned the gym ended up being a good friend of mine. And he had spent time in DC and went to college there. And so there was this connection to the East Coast that I was like craving. And so he understood a lot of that. And then, yeah, I had my girls, I had my gym, but then y'all, I struggled to find work-life balance. That was so incredibly hard. But I want to preface that a little bit with, like, I know that balance doesn't truly exist, right? Like, I know that I wasn't looking for necessarily a perfect balance, but I just wanted to not work constantly all the time. I refuse to work and just have no life. I refuse to have no weekend. I refuse to have friends that are separate from my workplace. Those things are kind of important to me, but I struggled to find that overseas. And it was especially sad because, so Cam and I were living in this whole other country, this whole other culture. And it's not your own. And being able to do that is a huge, huge blessing. It's a huge life change. But if you're listening to this and you've ever taken time and lived outside of wherever you're listening from, wherever your home, like home country is, if you've ever stepped outside there and actually lived somewhere, you know that it is just an incredible opportunity. It changes you it changes your heart. It changes your perspective on life. And anyone who has the opportunity and doesn't look at it as a huge blessing, I'm sorry, I think you just need to shift your perspective, because it is a huge blessing. But to not take full advantage of your time there and truly get a chance to experience the culture and experience the land, if you have had that and you haven't taken advantage of it, that's a huge tragedy. So what I mean was that Cam and I were a part of this team, a part of this work environment where the main priority was to work. And because of that, we we didn't get to take like weekends and go travel to other parts of Ethiopia. We struggled to kind of find the deep dark crevices of the culture that we wanted to explore and experience. We had a hard time finding that because of the environment that we were in. It's again, when I referenced this, I think in the first episode, it's again, that feeling of we're living in Africa, but working in white America, because in America, we work ourselves to death. In America, we don't even use our vacation days. In America, we don't travel. In America, we don't experience other cultures. That's the white American way. But in Ethiopia, it's a relational culture. In Ethiopia, you don't, and in many other places in the world, you don't work yourself to death. The relationships in your life are what add value to your life. The experiences you have are what add value to your life. And so if you have ever had a chance to live overseas, we were living overseas, but we weren't getting to fully experience the Ethiopian culture like we would have wished. And so to us, it really felt like a tragedy. And if you've had that experience, and you've worked similarly in the mission field that we've worked in and not gotten to truly experience the culture where you were living, I hope that you also feel like it's a tragedy. So Cam and I, I kind of mourn those experiences that I didn't get to have. The system that we were a part of, it idolized busyness and working over relationship and loving people. So we were there to work alongside and love on the Ethiopians, but the system of the organization that we were a part of, and really, honestly, I feel like it's the system of the evangelical world in America, it values being busy. You're working for your Lord, so you always have to be busy. But if what we're supposed to be doing is supposed to be always rooted in love, sometimes we miss that. We're so busy that we can't love the people that we're supposed to be loving because we're just so busy working for God and working for the Lord. Honestly, that was a lot of what Cam and I experienced in Ethiopia. And I have great mourning in my heart for the experiences that we didn't get to have. The whole time we were in Ethiopia, I got to go to an Ethiopian church service, an actual church service, only once because I was so busy working. But I just think how differently I would have had of an experience, had a perspective of Ethiopian church, had I actually gotten to experience the Ethiopian church. I think it's very dangerous to go overseas and think that what the Jesus you have is better than the Jesus they already have. And so you don't allow your team or your people to experience what is already there. How can you assume a system is broken if you've never even experienced the system? You know, how can you assume that something a culture is doing is wrong if you haven't genuinely had interactions with it? And those were just some of the things that I began right away from the beginning to feel morally conflicted with. I was being told to be a part of a church that was better than what was being offered in the city of Addis. But really, I never got to experience what was really there. So how can I honestly say that something was better if I don't genuinely have a foundation of what was genuinely already there? So those are just some of the experiences that we got to have. And when you talk about the busyness that comes with being a missionary and being in really an evangelical white America, it almost felt like if I wasn't working myself to death, then I wasn't a successful missionary. My success wasn't built on how well I was loving the Ethiopians that I was there to work alongside. It was really built on like, well, how busy are you? We would have meetings and talk about, well, I'm so busy doing this. I'm busy doing that. Honestly, I'm just so tired of the word busy. I don't want to hear anyone else in evangelical America say anything about being busy. I'm like, we get it. You're so busy that you can't love people. That's what it means now to me. But yeah, it really felt like if I wasn't working myself to death, then I wasn't a successful missionary. And honestly, when I think back to that, I just guess maybe my Bible's missing the part of the Great Commission where the Lord says, I need you to work for me and work until the point of burnout. You know, if we're working for the Lord and working with the Lord, I just have to think, like, isn't the Lord in charge? So I shouldn't have to work myself to death in order to be a successful missionary. I shouldn't have to work myself to death in order to be a successful minister. loving people is the root of what we're doing. And also God's in charge. So yeah, we work hard. Yeah, we value our time. Yeah, we're good stewards of our time. But that doesn't mean that we don't get to enjoy our life at all. It doesn't mean that we don't get to travel. It doesn't mean that we don't get to have genuine relationships with the people that we're working alongside and serving with. It's just like a minor soapbox that I feel like I could be on forever. But that was my experience overseas, that if I wasn't working myself to death, then I wasn't, not only was I not a good missionary, I wasn't a good Christian. And that was what ultimately led to burnout for me. And so then comes March of 2020. And at that point, honestly, I was done. I was done mentally, physically, spiritually. When I landed back in the States, it was like having been removed from that situation, I began to realize that I was completely burnt out. I had been living in fight or flight mode for 2 years. And this was probably one of the hardest points of my life thus far. I had experienced, you know, stress and living in fight or flight mode a little bit, but for 2 years, when I tell y'all that the doctors thought I had lupus, like my hair was falling out, I was incredibly sick. My daughter was incredibly sick. Cam was in and out of the hospital and her digestive system's like shutting down. So to say that we were stressed was a complete understatement. And it just made me really step back and be like, what the heck did we experience the past 2 years? Why did I stay, God? What is going on? And so, yeah, we landed and this was our reality. It was like, my body was like, okay, finally we're safe. Finally, we can relax. Finally, we can shut down. And it completely shut down. So this is what was going on with us personally. And then COVID hits, right? So at this point in March, we didn't really realize how bad COVID was going to be. We thought maybe we would be gone from Ethiopia for like a month, then we go back. We didn't realize we would never go back to Ethiopia. We didn't realize that we wouldn't even be able to get back in the country even if we wanted to go. And then we landed in a COVID America. So everything was shut down. People are like masked up. We're social distancing. And so it was just, so you talk about trauma on top of trauma. And then on top of trauma. So then after, so having all this personal trauma, just being completely burnt out, being completely done mentally, physically, and spiritually. And then we're going through COVID and a pandemic for the first time ever. So it's like, what is that going to do? What's going to happen with our life now? And then in case we needed anything else to happen, and then George Floyd died. And for me, watching George Floyd die on camera was like the nail in the coffin for me at that point of where I was at. That was, for me, the physical representation of what it felt like to be a Black missionary and minister in the business of white evangelicalism for the past few years. I remember calling my mom and talking to friends in Ethiopia, especially that second year, as I was learning to live life a little bit, as I was learning to process a little more. I remember actually saying the words to my friends, like, man, I just feel like I can't breathe here. Like, I'm living in this constant state of survival mode. I'm never enough. I'm on a team that doesn't even want me here. I'm undervalued. I'm treated like a second-class citizen in my team. I'm treated less than because I'm different and because I'm Black, and because different and Black obviously means wrong, and that was how it was portrayed and explained. And I literally would say the words, I feel like I can't breathe. And so watching this man die on camera with this white cop's knee on his neck and him saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, it took my breath away. I felt it in every ounce, every single crack and crevice of my body. I felt that. And as I watched it, I couldn't breathe. And I said, what have I been a part of, Lord? What am I going to do?
And honestly, that was the point where I checked out. I think it was at that point where I was like, I'm gonna get off of social media. I need to kind of just shut down for a little while, because and even the chatter online, right? As I'm watching this, I'm like, this is what it means to be Black in America. This is what it means to be a Black missionary and minister in a white evangelical system. It means that I'm undervalued, that my life doesn't have value, and I literally feel like going to work every day. I cannot breathe. And so I checked out. And I want to take this time to say that I have talked to many of my friends that are minorities who have had similar experiences. And there's so many systems that are in place that are suffocating Black and brown people. I've been a part of the evangelical system, but I have friends that work in other areas that say the same thing. And these systems that are in place, they're suffocating us. We say that we're taking the gospel to the nations, right? To help them. But the systems that we have in place aren't helping. The systems that we have in place are not loving people. It's suffocating us. I was in Ethiopia trying to love on and work alongside some amazing Ethiopians who have faith like I've never seen, who understand love and relationships like I've never seen. And I just wanted to be there as their sister in Christ to help them and work alongside them and learn with them and share the love of Jesus with them. But the system that was in place from the organization that I work with was suffocating me as a person of color. You can't skip over me as a brown American and go to Africa to take the gospel there, to take love there, quote unquote love, when you won't even love me as an individual. How can your system that is in place not love me, not help me? It's actually suffocating me. How can that same system want to take the quote unquote love of Jesus to people who look exactly like me all across the world? And the fact that so many of these systems do this in the name of Jesus, honestly, is still heartbreaking for me to this day. It's not a reflection of God's love. I don't know what it's reflecting, but it's not reflecting God's love. And I can say this next statement with certainty because I experienced it, but to stay in these systems too long, we lose our mental health, we lose our physical health, we lose our financial health. I genuinely felt like as I was a part of this system that my soul was dying. And when I say the system, I mean the business of the church, the business of evangelicalism. I'm not talking about the relationship with Jesus, because we have to learn how to separate those two. I know that the business of the evangelical church is people trying to act out God's love, is people trying to act out the Great Commission. I know that what is really God's love is separate from that. What is really the sacrifice of Jesus is separate from that. And I thank God for that wisdom, because had I not had the wisdom that these two are separate, when I left Ethiopia, I would have left Christianity. I would have walked away from Jesus, but I know better than that. Praise the Lord. I know that God loves me. I know that God has value in my life. I know that God has a calling on my life. I know that Jesus died for me and so many, and all of you that are listening to this. I know that those two things are separate. But the system that we have in place to support people in that, to disciple people in that, to help them walk in that, I call that system into question. I've watched that system break people. I've watched that system try to break me. I've watched that system say to me that I don't have worth and value as a Black person. And that in order to fit into their system, I need to be less Black. I need to be less outspoken. I need to be not so strong. But these are all the amazing things that God created me to be, right? Black and brown people are struggling in the systems that we have in place in America right now. Things cannot remain as they are. I spent most of 2020 in a really dark place. If you have been in my life for a while, you know, I talk very openly about mental health. It's something that I will continue to talk about on this show. I had a history with anxiety and depression. I haven't had a serious bout of anxiety and depression like I had in 2020 since I was in my early 20s. So like 2010, 2011, 2012. It was really rough. I doubted myself. I doubted God. I doubted my worth and my value. I didn't understand how people who say they love Jesus so much and who prophesy and speak in tongues and blah, 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 can undervalue, can place so little value on my life as a Black and brown person. I couldn't understand how I would go online and see conversations from people who supported Cam and I as missionaries and say they love me as a person, but then would say that George Floyd deserved to die. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand how I moved all the way overseas to work alongside and love on some amazing Ethiopians and other Africans on the continent. But then I was working alongside people who would talk down about Black and brown people in meetings, which, as if I wasn't in the room. I didn't understand any of this. And so that was the state of mind I was in 2020. But then that brings me to today. And I want to say that there's so much else that I want to share, so much else that I could share, so much else that I will share. There's layers to all of this. But for the purpose today, I want to say that I have not lost hope. If you're listening to this today and you are a Black and brown or brown person, you are an ally to minorities, I want you to know that hope is not lost. I think we've all been through a lot of crap. Like, the past few years have sucked for most of us. But I also am a person who believes that from incredible tragedy and trauma and hard crap can bring beautiful strength. Can bring new purpose. It can bring clarity and direction. Sometimes where God allows us to be broken apart to put us together more beautifully. And I refuse to believe that this situation is anything other than that, because I have not lost hope. And so if you're listening to this today, I thank you for listening. I want you to know that if you're listening, and you have breath in your lungs, you are alive. Congratulations, you made it to almost the end of 2021. And I want you to know that regardless of what your situation looks like today, I want you to remember that your life has purpose, that your life has value. You have worth. And don't you let anyone else tell you otherwise. But in this hope that I have, I believe that there can be change, because I refuse to believe that, I refuse to settle and accept less than in this life, not only for myself, but for others around me. So I refuse to believe that we can't bring change, that we can't bring education. But in that education, in that change, it requires some of us to step out and be bold. It requires us to live in our purpose. It requires us to live in love. It requires us to be forgiving. It requires us to find healing. But it also requires us to not be silent. And this is the space that I created for that. This is where Okay, Let's Talk comes from. Because I have hope. Because I believe in talking and being open to bring healing and to bring change and to bring knowledge and awareness. I hope that you know that even in telling my story, it's never to gossip. It's never to spill the tea, although I hope the tea was good, y'all, but still. It's never to do that. It is to bring awareness. I have people who are listening that have supported Cam and I during our missionary journey. And you may have realized that I went silent after a while. And you may not have known why. And I think some others would have just loved that I would have just quietly disappeared into the darkness of whatever I was going through. But I want those people to know that I have been put back together after a season of brokenness, and I am even stronger and even better than I was then. So I will not and I cannot be silent, because when there is injustice, when there are people who are struggling, when there are unfair, crappy things that are happening in our society, we have to keep talking to one another. In love, of course. But I will not be silent. I have watched people, especially living here in the Midwest, who have genuinely wanted to learn. They genuinely wanted to help bring healing and change. And so I will keep talking. I will not be silent to make others feel more comfortable, because I want to remind you that great things come from being in uncomfortable places. I also will not break myself into small bite-sized pieces to make myself more digestible for any of you. I will exist unapologetically as the woman that God has created me to be. This sassy, loud, determined, bold woman that God created me to be. And I have created this space to stand in the gap and stand with others who are also experiencing the same. Now is not the time to be silent, y'all. We have got to keep talking. We have got to use our voices. I know that there are some of our brothers and sisters who are out there and they are struggling. I will not be silent because I know that some of us are dying. Some of us are losing hope. Some of us don't know which direction to turn. We're still in the middle of a lot of this. I'm still in the middle of a lot of my healing. But it is at this point that I will not be silent. We will talk. We will laugh. We will cry. We will share. We will learn. And we will grow. And this is the context that I have created this show with. So until next time, love each other often. And love each other deeply. Peace.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Okay, Let's Talk. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to stay up to date on our latest episode. You can also check the episode notes for ways to get in touch with me and for more info on the show. Until next time, own your story and live empowered. Bye.